This is the FY 2015 budget hearings and purchases. The purpose of this meeting is for council and those in attendance to raise any issues, concerns, amendments on any of the information that is brought forward with us, to us in attendance. Council person Stack, Bell, Cartier, Diller, Reda, Councilman, I'm Councilman Smiley, co-chair, chairing this meeting. Councilman Street.
I just heard.
With that, we've established a quorum. Can I have a motion on the minutes of the May 12th budget?
So moved, Mr. President.
The motion, the second, all in favor?
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Minutes are done. Okay. General discussion of the FY 15 budget is the first part of the agenda before we get to any, if there are any proposed amendments. Is there any outstanding questions? Okay, councilpersons Kilpatrick and Sheldon have joined us. Are there any questions or comments on what has already been presented to us? Councilman Cartier.
I just want to renew my question about the percentage of the sewer budget which is dedicated to drainage. And maybe, you know, get some further clarity about that. And let me just give you a case in point, and maybe folks from special services could comment. I received a concern from a constituent over at the Tally Library and Park and about work that had gone on over there. And, you know, I went over and looked it over, and it seemed that the stormwater pond that basically received all the stormwater from the parking lot had been worked on, renewed, cleaned up, you know. And I'm just wondering, is that sort of project coming out of the sewer funds for a project, a stormwater project that's related to our facilities? Is that what we end up doing with that sewer outlays for that?
Wait, Mayor, Acting General Manager, Special Services. We did not get your question, and we've got some numbers, but I actually needed to speak with Dave Del Bondi.
Okay.
Dave's been out for 2 weeks. It's about $6 million.
Okay.
About $6 million. We handle ponds in various ways. Some of the ponds we use, some of the pond repair money we use actually comes out of the capital program. We usually have about $600,000 annually, which helps us. And so that's most likely where any pond repair will come out.
So I guess most of the drainage work we are going to, you know, undertake would relate to our facilities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So $6 million approximately on an annual basis, and we bond that and pay for that out of, finance charges out of the sewer fund for anything related to drainage?
Ed, no, we're kind of fine enough. It depends on what the work is. If it's a crew doing work, it would be just operating. But if it's
right.
An actual project, it would
right.
Be bonded, yes.
Okay.
Councilman Reda.
Thank you.
Well, I think there was one more follow-up by the general manager.
Just Wayne Mary, Acting General Manager. Just a brief follow-up. We'll get you more details
okay.
when he gets back. I'll give you more details about that.
Will he be back before 27?
Yep. I just spoke with Mr. Anolicki. We'll work with him on the details. We'll get back to you before 27.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Councilman Cartier. All right.
That's it.
Councilman Reda.
Thank you. This be for real special services. You know, a lot of the jobs that are in the capital, some of them were multi-years. They, you know, they'll start today, end up a year or two from now or whatever, depending on the job. With that, is there a 5 or 10% within the budget for those particular jobs that are multi-year? And what I mean by that is because today's prices aren't going to be tomorrow's prices. And when the job continues on, is there a cost factor built into it?
Wayne Mary, Acting General Manager, Special Services. We do build that in as time goes on, but as the project proceeds, we continue to look at it and make sure that the numbers are still accurate.
because I noticed a couple jobs, not a lot, but a couple that came back to the council that they needed more money. And, you know, with that, you know, when a contractor bids, they're supposed to do their whole, they're supposed to do their homework. And when we put out the price, we're putting out an estimate price. I know, but when we do the estimate price, a lot of the projects that I was on, they always had a 5 or 10% above or less, plus or minus.
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager of Special Services. If we come back because we've underestimated the cost, chances are there's been a significant change somewhere in that project. Could be rock. Some issue which took it above that 5 or 10% plus or minus.
Yeah, no, because the one project that we had still ongoing was up at Green Line Hunter. Mm-hmm. They had the so-called mysterious rock up here, and we had to have a hearing on the contractor. And they're supposed to, now I know a lot of contractors did work up in that area way back when, and they ran into the same thing, but it was built into their cost of what their bid was. So that's the reason why I'm asking some of these questions on not only for the rock, but for other things that come up into the construction end.
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager of Special Services. And it's, you know, that one issue with the rock, that matter is still under litigation.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any members of the council have any questions? Councilman Shelley.
I guess this will be for Special Services. I still see, of course, I haven't seen a revision. I think Councilwoman Kilpatrick and myself went in and seen the county exec, Jim McDonald. I'm looking, even if it's my district, Carousel, but we were lowering the bond cost. What did I just, page 55. It says 5.6, basically, but there was 2.1 in which the county, we agreed, the county exec and everybody, on taking care of the, what was it, the stage area and stuff like that to take it out that would lower this cost.
And we're looking from the finance office. That was one of the amendments that I
have. Oh, okay, you have, I have
it. We're going to discuss with council.
Oh, okay.
You know, I have all that information here to pass out to
you. Oh, okay, we should have let you talk first. The other way, okay, good.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the public safety grant and aid to the Volunteer Fire Service, I will have a handout at the appropriate time and go into a recommendation as to how we get to an amendment.
If you've got an amendment or something that you plan on, we can hold that till we move. That is the very next
very good
order. So
yep.
Keep me from scrolling on my days.
Just want to let you know what my intent was.
Any other questions from any members of council on what we were already presented with? Hearing none.
And one more, I guess, Mr. Council. Before we go on, that way I don't have to go back. But I got to look at the page.
We're not going back to there.
The farmland preservation, it says prior authorization of $14.7 million. Is there... That available balance is $3,500. The other obligation, it says the obligated amount is 11.2. Is that was what already was spent or has been documented? That's already been spent. Okay, so good.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Ready? Next, we're going to move on to number three, proposed amendments to the FY15 budget. Anyone at the table first, and then we'll move to the administration, and then we'll discuss whatever it's going to pay on.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned the three. Is there a three specific, or what do you mean?
On your agenda, number one is a
proposed. Number three. That. I thought you said you had three in front of you.
No.
I
have none.
No. Okay, I'm just going to let everybody know that it is coming. I am preparing an amendment to the budget that will add a, I don't know if Janet's sponsoring this with me or not, if you are, thank you, if not, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, then me and Janet will be sponsoring a amendment to the budget that will be adding a paralegal to the office. I've worked with the administration and Jim Boyle and the budget on this, and we've had Janet in it, and we're going to add it into the budget at approximately a step two. And but although that's what's being added into the budget in the amendment that will come forward, council will have the discretion to decide what the pay step will be when that position is advertised to be added.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. And this is many, many weeks ago, I talked about wanting to add several positions, and this is what we're down to, so this is part of that discussion.
Anybody else have a comment? This is, for me, I thought council had agreed, and again, everybody has a right, so I'm not taking exception to that. We had discussed this, and you're right, you did bring it forward. Council agreed that we would discuss creating the positions first, going to the funding later. This legislation is going to create a position and fund it all at the same time. And
that's in all of the discussions with the policy director, that is where we came to. And part of that is, again, and you and I have had this discussion, that when I brought it forward because we were in budget cycle, because I've said to every department, don't bring it to me in the middle of the year, we have a budget cycle, we work on these things then. So that's,
and
this is where we've come
had,
down to.
And had this, had council already had this position on council, it would have been a different story. But you have a right to bring it, and that's fine, I'm just telling you, fine. I'm not supporting it. I don't think we need a paralegal. In my opinion, I will voice it further at the appropriate time when the resolution comes forward.
And just to add to the funding, will come from finance. Will and again recertify the revenues in order to cover the position. It will not be coming out of reserves and or contingencies. You know, the revenues projected for next year will be recertified in order to cover the position.
And then next year, it will automatically be a part of council's budget if it's approved.
Right. Correct.
Councilman Street.
Point of clarification before I raise my concern. I heard you say that you talked to administration about it. Does the administration have a position on this new proposed position for council?
Just to add, the discussion was where the money was going to come from, because we could have taken it out of reserves, we could have taken it out of contingency, but the discussion was where the money was coming from, not the position.
Well,
so that's why we come up with the recertification of the revenues.
I'll hold some of my concern for the debate and the discussion, but my position hasn't changed since it was mentioned initially, you know, and I have major problems with when we supposedly broke, we eliminated a position. Out of all the votes of my 10 years that I wish I had back, that's the one I regret the most. And now, all of a sudden, we have to create a new position when the overwhelming majority of council at the time voted to eliminate the position. And in good conscience, for that reason alone, I cannot and will not support it. And what happened to the person in that position is one of the saddest things that, just very sad. Second, I made the suggestion initially, you know, before you start creating positions, we need to have desk audits and really look at what the current positions are doing, how they're operating, how they're functioning. Right now, we got a paralegal. Certified paralegal on staff. I want to make sure we're utilizing appropriately all the positions we have, including 13 aides, before we start going to the level of creating yet another position. So I have major problems with it, and you know, I don't know. I know how my conscience is, but I don't know how anybody who voted to eliminate the position previously, when we supposedly broke, wants to come forward and bring it back in. My conscience just won't let me do that.
Can we move on to another one?
Well, I just... I was going to make another comment.
Pardon? Okay.
Yeah. No, I was just going to add, the councilman's comments are exactly right and directly on point. And the issue that I guess I see it on this side as that we're faced with now is the fact that we should have not eliminated the position. It should have just been left it like all the other departments have done. It doesn't matter. We've done it and it's over with. But we should have just left it there and unfunded it and then still had it when we wanted it. And it seems to be what all the departments do when they bring their budgets through. But we didn't do that. We eliminated all the positions and we're faced with it now. And my dilemma stems from, and everybody else has the different interactions, but and I could even pull the email. But and now Carol was off 2 weeks because she went on a vacation for a week and then was sick, I guess, about a week or so. But, you know, when I send her a request, I get back, you know, well, you're 40 in line. I'm down to only number 20. You know, nobody handles anything while I'm not in the office. And he's exactly right. You know, I don't know about looking at all the positions, the reclassification, seeing what who's doing what and where it's going to go. I don't know. But I just know where we're at today and what's happening.
Councilman Daggett, I wasn't one that authorized additional vacation time for the council. You know, I'm in here quite, I will grant, the last 4 months, I've not been in here as much as I have been in the past. But my visual observations and everything else, it's not warranted. And again, that's my opinion, and that's not going to change. Councilman Kilpatrick.
Okay, well then, staying on this subject, we have discussed the fact that there is a paralegal in this office. So we've also, and we've discussed, you know, whether people maybe could be moved around, whether you know, from the inside people could apply for the job. I mean, we have discussed all of that. Do we all need 13 aides? I'm not going to go there again because...
You mean, do we all need one aide?
Do we all need one aide? I don't know.
I do need 13.
You might need 13. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of questions, and we have hired a consultant to go through the handbook. So I think some of this is going to probably come up when we talk about that as well as other things. But it the paralegal on staff has been discussed.
Okay. Councilor Street.
I think Sabrina and Carter, in addition to this year, last year was a unique year because of the Barley Mill litigation. And the fact that the administration ended up in a different position than taking a different position on that issue than council, we had to hire outside council for that. I didn't see at the time, don't understand now why we hired outside council if it was necessary for the time to be spent with outside counsel at trial and preparing for trial, and at the same time, council to council was actively participating in that litigation. My point being, when put to task, we're going to end up hiring outside counsel anyway. And if the focus stays on the day-to-day operation of legal matters here with counsel, and it does not include litigation and running over to the courthouse for trial and things like that, I think this year will be a different year.
Okay. Another topic.
Okay.
Public training.
Do you want me? I have a couple things. Do you want me just to do one at a time, and then we'll discuss that? I do not have an. Well, I do have an amendment coming forward. I don't have it with me to take out the $225,000 to the city of Wilmington for the fire truck. We were told last year that. Or just to the fire department. We were told last year it was a one-time allocation, and now it's back on the books again this year. I have a problem with the fact that they are an incorporated city. When you have a charter and you're incorporated, you have to prove that you can handle your own departments. If you can't, then you're supposed to be giving them up, and it should be deleted from your charter. So if the city of Wilmington cannot handle their own police department, then they need to address that, or their fire department, they need to address that. I don't think that it's under the purview of New Castle County to continue to give them $250,000 on an annual basis.
Any questions, any comments on that? Councilor Street.
Here we go again. You know, beat up on the city, take away from the city, and we have yet to review all the allegations and the concerns brought forward about the volunteer fire companies, such as maybe not the need for the number of companies in close proximity, such as the need not having the need for the extensive amount of equipment that firehouses share, and there were some questions, and I'm bringing forth, I will be bringing forth an ordinance or resolution making the existing volunteer fire accountable, fire departments more accountable for the money that they do receive. That's in process, and I delayed that, and that's my fault, but, you know, the continued attacks on the city are unwarranted, fundamentally unfair, and obviously I'm not going to support that.
Gentlemen, Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess if you know, based on what Councilwoman Kilpatrick is presenting as far as the 225, at some point I'd like to kind of give an overview of the grant and aid for the Volunteer Fire Service, what wasn't in there, what we're told will be in there, and I will be bringing forth an amendment to increase the ambulance, the emergency medical service portion of the grant and aid for the volunteer fire companies. Whatever time you're ready for me to present that, I can present that. And I'll just leave it at that for right now until when you're ready.
Well, anything further on the 225? If not, Councilman Bell,
okay.
Roll into your grant and aid department.
If we could pass these around. Wait a minute, let me get some over here. Okay. What you'll see is last year's, which is the current budget year, FY14, is the back page. And on that page, you'll see that the total grant and aid for the Volunteer Fire Service for fire, ambulance, rescue boat, additional stations, the City of Wilmington Fire Department, and a few other things that are there, special operations, the bread phones, which are the direct lines that hang on the outside of fire stations, and the basic life support mobile data terminals. Last year it was a total of $4,059,163. And the breakdown to the far right will actually show you what your individual volunteer fire companies received last year as far as grant and aid. The front page is the FY15 annual appropriations that was proposed in the budget, and it duplicates last year with the exception that the $180,000 for the Volunteer Fire Service, which would have been an increase, was removed. Okay, and it shows still shows the 225 for the City of Wilmington and the other categories. Now, I have brought this directly to the attention of County Executive. I was told yesterday and today, both yesterday and today by Jim McDonald, that a 5% increase, $180,000, will be put into the budget for the Volunteer Fire Service. And that's fine. I think that the executive, the administration, committed to an overall 5% increase in the budget, and for whatever reason, it just didn't show up. But with that being said, there's a couple things that, and there probably ought to be a little bit more presented by the administration on the Volunteer Fire Service, and it's not. And I think sometimes we're blindsided by information or a lack of information, but the Volunteer Fire Service does an annual audit. Each one of the companies does an annual audit of their services. It shows everything about that fire company. Those audits are sent in to both the state of Delaware, and it is required as part of the contract with the Volunteer Fire Services protecting fire rescue and EMS protection in this county. The county government receives an audit from all 21 volunteer fire companies showing what their income, their expenditures, and everything is. So that's been a standard practice. It's been there for many years. And so it seems that sometimes none of that information ever comes forward. But there is documentation provided as part of the contractual agreement for providing protection to a district. Because the county government, under state law, has the option to contract for fire rescue and EMS protection with the Volunteer Fire Service. And they've so chose to do that since really the inception of county government. And some of your fire companies in the county are well over 100 years old. So there is an audit. But what I'd like to propose is that there is a need, and I believe there is a need, with the ambulance service, the emergency medical service portion of the fire service, our fire service in the county. There's a need for an increase in the emergency medical service portion. There's categories, fire stations you'll see, and you'll see companies like Aetna that have four stations. Well, that's four times 55,587. We did that several years back for additional stations. And you'll see a company like Brandy 100 that gets 55,587 for fire. That's for one station. Christiana, three stations. Claymont, two stations. So as you go down, you'll see a difference in dollar amount, but it was based on stations. The emergency medical, all 21 companies provide basic life support from Aetna Hose, Hook and Ladder, all the way down to Belvedere, Station 30, Station 7, 8, 9, down to 30. They all receive an equal amount for providing basic life support, $55,595. They all receive a standard amount for rescue squads. And the rescue squads are actually used to back up emergency medical. It's used for motor vehicle collisions, for structure fires, various types of rescue. And then there are five departments in the county that received $22,882 for marine protection, and that being the companies that border the waterways. And you'll even notice that Minkwas of Newport is on air, because Minkwas, if you'll notice going down I-95, there's quite an elaborate boat ramp there. There are a lot of fishermen, a lot of folks that launch around the Newport area and go up and down to Christiana and out into the Delaware River. So Minkwas of Newport did add a rescue boat. But so when it's all said and done, you know, the grant, you know, when you look at the total numbers, I don't believe at this time that the 5% should be totally put towards the fire, the rescue boat. I think the 5% needs to be put towards the ambulance service, towards that ambulance category. But what I'm suggesting is that over the next 3 years, and I know that we can't commit to next year or the year after, but rather than try to increase the grant and aid for ambulance by 50%, or by 100%, or to say that companies that have four ambulances should receive four times the amount, all the companies now have paid and part-time personnel. They all run throughout Newcastle County. While they have individual districts, if Aetna Hose, Hook and Ladder is at Christiana Hospital, or they're coming down I-95, or Claymont Fire Company, or Brandy 100 is coming down I-95, or returning station, you have a toll collector that collapses at Delamore Bridge at 3 in the morning, they have on-the-road dispatch. So units are cross-borders, cross-districts. They work with one another, serve one another. The bottom line is they're serving the public. They're serving the public. So what my amendment will suggest is that we take the $55,595 grant and aid for basic life support to the volunteers and increase that by one-third. One-third would cost us $389,165. And $389,165. If you take, and what that would do is that would increase each one of the volunteer fire department's basic life support by $18,532. So their grant would go from $55,595 to $74,126. And I know this is a lot of numbers, but I've been crunching these things. I've been trying to take a look at what's realistic and what we could do here. You leave the the category for fire, the same as it is in next year's budget. You leave the rescue, you leave the rescue boat. You take a one-third increase in grant and aid for EMS, the $389,165. If the administration, in fact, is going to put the $180,000 in, which is a 5% increase above the $3,586,464 that was distributed amongst all the companies, that's $180,000. The $180,000 from the $389,165, we would have to make up $209,165 somewhere in order to achieve this. I think it's warranted. I think that when you look at the volunteer companies today, and you look at the fact that they are combination departments. They are a volunteer, but they're also part paid and part-time paid. They provide their salaries, their part-time salaries. They provide benefits. They provide, whether it's health care or insurance, they provide uniforms. And we all know what those costs are. So I think it's better said to do whatever we can to do to try to support sustained volunteer fire service, because when you look at $3.5 million, and I'm not going to compare the city of Wilmington, that's only $24 million, okay, for their fire department. But when you compare it to companies like Anne Arundel County, in Anne Arundel County, which is a sister county, we would be spending over $100 million to provide full fire rescue and EMS for a county of this size. And they have reduced stations. They've done a lot of things. I, for one, don't want to go to the folks and I'll use the fire district that I was the chief of for 11 consecutive years. Tell the folks in Eden Park and Hamilton Park and Rosegate, Rose Hill and Simon's Gardens and Holloway Terrace and Collins Park, tell them that because Minkwoodale provides fire rescue and EMS protection and runs mutual aid and runs together as a countywide fire department, then we're going to cut that fire department out. Try explaining that. Try explaining to the folks out in Pike Creek Valley that we're going to cut the new station, and it's not new anymore, but the additional station at Mill Creek Fire Company put out there as a recommendation of our land use department. And when you start to cut, when you start to get into a fully paid department, and yeah, there's cuts you can make. There's certainly things you can do. But it will be extremely costly. It will be extremely controversial from the standpoint of public protection as far as response times and taking things away from folks. So what I'm advocating is that I know it sounds like a lot, but if you say one-third of the EMS grant, increase that this year, if we were able to do another third next year and a third the following year, it would bring that grant up to where the EMS would be $100,000, $110,000. And if you take a look at the fire protection side of it, the companies with additional stations, they have additional ambulances. So when you look at Mill Creek, when you look at Claymont, and you look at Aetna and Wilmington Manor Volunteer Hose, they're providing additional ambulance service. And so I think we try to increase the grant and aid in the EMS portion of the budget in that category. We leave fire, rescue, and rescue boat where it is today for the next couple years and try to invest additional monies in grant and aid for the fire company EMS. When I said it sounds like a lot of money, anytime you look at an additional $209,000 above what would be budgeted, it's a lot of money. But if you take a look at Aetna Hose, Hook, and Ladder, and I'll give you an example, for them to increase by that one-third in ambulance service, it really only increases their overall budget by 6%. But on the other hand, companies like Five Points, companies like Belvedere, they would increase 13%, okay, overall. And they're the ones, some of the companies surrounding the city, some of the companies that aren't as fortunate as far as collections of billing, population from the size I give an example. Holloway Terrace Fire Company does a tremendous amount of ambulance runs over Delamore Bridge, 32 million vehicles a year. Look at how many collections they get off transporting folks to the Christiana or elsewhere from the scene of an accident. But yet, they're there to provide fire, rescue, and EMS to all the population of this county. And I think they do a tremendous job. I think our fire service does a tremendous job. So the shortfall, if the administration's committed to $180,000, the shortfall to accomplish increasing, each company under the 5% would recognize about $8,571. They would receive just shy of $10,000 additional per company above that if we were to find the $209,000. And So I present that. I think it's money that would be well invested. I don't disagree with accountability. I think that you'll hear some fire companies say that maybe they're a little better off than another company. We're dealing with folks that volunteer their time. And like we see in other volunteer organizations, some are blessed to have folks that may work in a bank that serve as their president or as a board of director. Some are not as blessed to have that type of talent. So there's going to be companies that probably are a little fiscally better off or smart in the way they do things. But we also have to realize that companies like Five Points and Ellesmere, Brandywine Hunter, Holloway Terrace, Minkwood Ale, smaller companies, they run together, they provide 24-hour protection, and many times there's three or four ambulances. And I'm not talking for one patient. I'm talking about a multi-vehicle collision. I'm talking about someone having delivering a baby in Holloway Terrace District. At the same time, there's an accident on the bridge. At the same time, there's a structure fire in Minkwood Hills District, and they've got injured folks. So these units are being used. And if you look at the number of ambulances in this county, and we've got to give credit to the southern part of the county, too, because we got out of the basic life support business of transporting and everything, because it defeated the purpose of our paramedic program, the two-tier response. A lot of times a medic, even if it calls for it, may get there and determine they're not needed, they clear and go back in service. We get back in the transport business, not only would it be costly, but we defeat the purpose of the two-tier response. And I look at Port Penn, Odessa, Volunteer Hose in Middletown, Townsend. At one time, they didn't provide basic life support. They all provide it now. So they're all part of this system. And like I say, this is we look at individual fire companies, but truly today, districts are still defined for fundraising and for billing. But when it comes down to it, all 21 fire departments run together 24 hours a day. There's no one fire company on a structure alarm that runs by themselves anymore. And it's due to people aren't knocking down the door at the firehouse to get in. Folks are working two jobs. You're volunteering a lot of time. You're away from your family at training, meetings, and everything. So, and they've tried. I mean, if you take a look, and some of you, I listen to country. And don't scold me for that, but I like country. But I listen to a radio show every day. And I know it's on some of the other shows, that all year long the Delaware Volunteer Firefighters Association advertises for folks to join the fire service. And there's openings in all facets, whether it's administrative, medical, volunteer your time. Just recently, the 21 companies in this county did a open house and had radio spots, advertisements. They spoke at community meetings. They asked folks to stop by the station, see what they're about, come join their fire company. It's sad, but if you go to some of the companies and ask them, nobody was knocking down their doors. So with that being said, I mean, I kind of gave a little bit broader overview because I'm not sure that we've ever had someone explain the fire category, the fire stations, the ambulance rescue boat, and what the totals is and how that came about. I think that if we were able to accomplish this, I think that the volunteer fire service would continue to provide medical care. There are some things going on in Dover, and just real briefly, there's two or three pieces of legislation down there. One is asking each county government to share a portion of the overall emergency medical service. And I believe the number may be about 15% of what the total for each county. So our county is estimated by the audits of about $18 million a year, which really is not that far out of sync, because if you look, just city fire, $24 million a year. So countywide EMS service, $18 million for Newcastle County. So they're saying maybe our share should be about 15%. But what the state is looking at now, and I give the credit, give credit to the fire service down there working with folks, is that, and George, you, Councilman, you suggested about gas tax, about other appropriations that are down there. Well, they're looking at the insurance money. They're also looking at a $10 fee on traffic violations, because in a lot of cases, when you get fined, that $10 might be paying for medical service, be it somebody crashing or somebody that's intoxicated or whatever. So they're looking at different avenues. They still have the enabling legislation that I think has been pushed back, and it's exactly that, enabling. And I have personally told folks that I know in the fire service and fire companies that I cannot support, will not support property tax increases, okay, to fund the fire service. I think there's a number of other ways that we can do it, and I think being creative and everything. So then I read in the paper, and this will be, I'll just sum this thing up, but I read in the paper where the Register of Wills has identified $1.5 million, turned it back in, and I read where the county administration is saying that it's $1.5 million, we really need that in the police department, and that's probably where it'll go. So give me a break when it comes down to the fact of, let's try to be fair, let's try to be work in coordination with all emergency services. Our police department is fully paid, our paramedics are fully paid, our volunteer service is a combination department. But what we've got to own up to, and I've been told by the administration, it's not our responsibility. It is our responsibility. And the Fire Rescue and Ambulance Services County is our county fire service. So, and I'll leave it at that, but the amendment would be to ask, and I have some ideas to where we could find it, the $209,000, and I think it's reasonable just going with a third in that category and getting where we need to get. Start to get, and so that's where I am.
You go to this,
and I'm sorry for being so long, but I think it really kind of explained a lot of.
We know your passion, and we will suffer through it.
Okay.
I want to acknowledge on the record that Councilman Powers and Council President Bullock came in early in Councilman Bell's presentation. Let me clarify on the record. My comments do not indicate my support or lack of support. This council doesn't know by now. Once I make my mind up, I have no problem telling you. So I've got two things, Councilman Bell. The $180,000 that you referenced in last year's budget, I went after that $180,000 because the fact that it was listed as a discretionary fund did not sit well. There was no concrete platform as to where it was going to go, what it was going to pay for, what it was going to do.
Right.
It was discretionary funding that could have been spent anywhere. That was my issue with that. That part, I'm glad you brought it up. I was going to, and I will. I am far, far, I was going to say from being happy, but nobody tries to make me happy, with the Volunteer Fire Service for attempting to backdoor this council by going to Dover and try to put in, they can call it enabling legislation, but to put legislation in that puts this council in a position to have to tell them yes or no, that we will put in place what's necessary to implement a tax, then put this council in a position of every time they come knocking to say yes or no. What you just said mirrors what I said to the legislators. You said a third this year, a third next year, and a third the following year. Exactly what I told them was, do you think that they're not going to be knocking on this door every year? Under that, I'm just not happy with the way they did it. This council's never barred them from this door, from coming in and talking with us. I still maintain the few things that I did propose and the one that I'm not hearing anything on, hopefully they will go there. I said, I hear about it. The state needs doing it, or whoever needs to do it, needs to enable them to do what everyone else does. Go after the money that's owed you and collect it. Have the right to bill it, have the right to collect it, have the right to lien, whatever you have to do. And then after you've done that, and you can come back and show us that you've done that, let's take a look at what you've done with your revenue.
Can I respond back just to the one thing on the collection part of it? We all need to, I guess, be sensitive to the fact that the volunteer fire companies bill for ambulance service, okay? And the insurance companies have not done their fair share. And we heard where they're paying less here in Newcastle County or the state of Delaware than they are up in Pennsylvania. You know, the insurance commissioner, state of Delaware, should definitely get involved in it. But most of the fire companies, the vast majority of fire companies, have a billing agency, and they'll bill. And then they'll send a second notice. But if someone cannot afford to pay the balance, they don't go after them. And there are a few that are. But I just want to make this one point. The fact is that there are folks that we provide grant and aid money. We've got money coming, trying to money from the state. There's some donation money. I think the fire companies are well served by trying to bill and get paid back as much as they can from insurance. But let's also remember and be considerate towards our populations, our different areas of the county and everything, because there are some folks that can't afford to pay the balance. And if we tell them to go after them, and, you know, I know because I've gotten a couple calls. It's very easy to ruin what credit people have because now you put them in collections. And so I think there's a fine balance as to you try to collect, but when we get to the point with doing what we're doing, we could put folks in a very bad position. We charged within our taxes. We do provide paramedic services and police services, but we don't have a separate tax identified for fire. I don't really propose that we put one in effect. But at the same time, I'm just saying, when you go after collections, is that be careful who we're going after, because they're the folks that live in all of our districts.
Councilman Bell,
and there's some that can't afford it.
Councilman Street, mm-hmm. I understand that. It's just like your other medical institutions. They have a formula by which they calculate. I will tell you, I got a $750 bill, went to my insurance company. The insurance company advised they were paying 60% for the ambulance service. I called them up, said, I've got this, I'm not happy with it. They said, that's what we pay. I said, fine. My next premium that I pay will be 60% of what you bill me. 20 minutes later, I got a phone call back saying, we're sending the rest of the money. Not that they will all do that, but it's just like every other medical institution. Yeah. You got to weigh it. Yep. Councilman Street. And then Councilman Cartier.
Well, I want to briefly put the two amendments together. And I'm going to start out by coming forward with what I came with last night. I talked about the Brown decision and the progress hadn't been made in education. And this is like deja vu for me all over again. Very first meeting that I sat in as a councilman, I got in a fight over $1 million fire truck for the city. We had to stop the meeting. Finally, we got an understanding. So now, 10 years later, 2 years in a row, I got a fight about a $225,000 grant to the fire company for the city. Look at the two together. It's shuffleboard with the city of Wilmington, because you're going to take on the one amendment, $225,000 grant from the city, and on the other amendment, you're going to give an increase of $209,000. And if that isn't the way it's intended, I have every right, and I think the general public would agree, that basically you're going to increase funding off the backs of the City of Wilmington Fire Department. Let me be real clear. It's not about $225,000 out of 200 and however many million. It's the point. It's the wrong message being sent from this government at the wrong time. Everybody at this table knows full well what transpired with the Belvedere firefighters and the other firefighters. I'm trying to be a responsible council person. I didn't inflame that. We talked about it. What I want to bring forward, I didn't want to bring it forward, timing is everything, so it wouldn't be contentious. But here again, it's deja vu. Set right here yesterday, 2 years later, fighting about the grant for PAL. And I have never in the 10 years I've been sitting on this council so much as thought about recommending something come out of somebody else's district, but repeatedly, I fight for the fire truck, fight for the fire grant, fight for PAL, and appears the only one I might win is the one for the library. It's fundamentally unfair, and y'all want to start this fire, that's fine. Win, lose, or draw, I'll continue to make my argument, but I wanted to be real clear. I didn't pick this fight. I didn't start this fire, but this is down the road we're going to go down. I have every intention of throwing all the gas on that I can find.
Councilman Cordier and Councilman Bell.
Just to further reinforce points made by Councilman Bell, I read the state report, the Task Force on EMS Service, and I urge every member of council to read that report because it's a real eye-opener. And one of the things that people have to remember, the fire companies operate under a state mandate in terms of their EMS, which is 24/7, 365 response times, and it became a more or less an unfunded mandate that the volunteer fire service has to take care of. And I want to just say that I think that this proposal that Councilman Bell's laid out in its rough configuration is a sensible, targeted response that addresses the main financial strain that is being felt by the volunteer fire service today, working the EMS on a 24/7 basis with the response time. And when you look at the amount of runs that are going on in EMS across this county, it's a huge number, and it's not a service that can fail to show up. And they, to their credit, given the financial strain they're under, they make it available to folks. And going back to the issue of reimbursements, it's a little interesting to look at that when you read the report. First of all, Medicaid caps their reimbursement at $62 a run, and the volunteer agency cannot bill the balance on Medicaid. They're prohibited by law. The same goes for Medicare. Medicare caps theirs at a little over $200 per run. So essentially, when you're dealing with those two population sets, which are, I would say, suggest a large portion of people that are, you know, using this service, and there are others that have regular insurance, you know, they don't have an easy out on that. They have to fund that from other parts of their operation or do fundraising, you know, to find the cost shift that they need to continue the service. So I think the proposal is, that Councilman Bell's brought up, is sensible. It addresses a critical need. It isn't a solution, but it definitely demonstrates a will to be involved and to help them.
Well, as my comment was, they need to work with the state, whoever hamstrings them. Councilman Bell.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple points I want to make here. And number one is, when politicians run for office, they say a lot of things. And during this last campaign, the volunteer fire service apparently, I don't have a witness here, but apparently was told by some folks that were running for the administration that, you know, you go to Dover, you get some things passed, we'll work with you, okay? The folks get elected, and they have a lapse in memory. I'm not after the $225,000. My proposal isn't to take away. The county executive, and I had this conversation with him, he identified $225,000 that he's put in the budget for the city. And he said to me, and he can listen to the tape, and if he were sitting here, I would say the same thing, because I had an extensive conversation with at a Cabela's. He couldn't get up from the table. Folks were trying to reel him in to get him away from me. And he was asked to put the $225,000 in the budget. I said, that's fine. But I also represent a very large district with 10 volunteer fire departments that I know need an increase in grant and aid more than 5% in emergency medical care. If you can find $225,000 somewhere in the budget for the City of Wilmington Fire, then so be it. But at the same time, to distribute a $180,000 increase amongst 21 fire companies that are providing countywide service for us, I'm asking the county executive and administration to find $209,165. We just saw where the register of wills, $1.5 million. We saw where we got a surplus, and I, for one, don't recommend that we go in and we just find every dollar we got and spend it. I think this is justifiable. And I want to just touch on real quickly the thing from the meeting when the Volunteer Fire Service came in. Yes, there definitely was an issue to occur between some members of two different fire companies on a trip. It wasn't sanctioned or sponsored by, but they are representatives of the community and the fire service. And those fire companies, I think, have or are dealing with it. I can't speak for them. But we always come back to, when we talk about things, I believe in diversity. I support diversity. Okay? When Mouse talked about the ambulance run where Holloway Terrace responded, I was on the ambulance. So I remember the run. The Volunteer Fire Service, made up of over 5,000 volunteers, men, women, and young folks, a lot of it is from family history and tradition. Grandparents, fathers, sons, daughters now belong to the volunteer fire departments. The numbers are dwindling because they don't have a lot of folks knocking down their doors. But at the same time, let us not forget that I don't think that any one of these 21 volunteer fire departments, whether they had an argument on a bus that was unjustified, whether things were said on that bus that was unjustifiable, I don't think that there's one out of 21 fire departments here in their membership that look at race, color, creed, nationality when they're responding to an ambulance or a fire call and serving the public. And we have a very, very diverse county. We have very diverse districts. I can't speak as to why folks don't want to join the volunteer fire company. But I can speak to the fact that I think sometimes we're a little unfair in taking a look at a volunteer fire rescue and EMS system that is saving this county millions of dollars. And I don't believe for one minute. I've been active in the fire service for 47 years now. When I responded on a fire, it didn't matter who owned that home. It didn't matter whose child it was, what nationality, what color. We were trained to help and serve others, and that's what we did, and that's what these folks are doing.
Right. Let me go to Councilwoman Kilpatrick, then Councilman Street, and then...
And I'm not asking for the 225.
Like to get back on track if there are any other amendments forthcoming. Councilwoman Kilpatrick, then Councilman Street.
Thank you. I just want to make it very clear that when I asked Policy Director to draft an amendment, that I had not spoken to anyone, whether it's the fire service, Councilman Bell, no one. I was not happy with it happening last year. I had not seen it in a budget ever before that, and that is why I asked that it be taken out this year. To use the phrase, it's the will of council. What I'm going to present it, whatever happens, happens. We go by service function fees. Wilmington does not pay a service function fee for that process. if they want money from us, then maybe we need to look at putting it in their taxes, just like we put it in everybody else's taxes in the unincorporated section of the county. What's coming out of the state, I have made it very clear to the sponsors of some of that legislation, especially to Brian Short, who's sponsoring the enabling legislation, that I do not want this county or any county to be put in a position where when the volunteers fail, because ultimately I believe they will. In my lifetime here, I have seen the number of volunteers go down. When they fail, who is going to pick that up? On the backs of Newcastle County, we would have to double, at least double, everybody's taxes in order for us to pick that up, and I do not want that to happen. We heard here yesterday, I believe, an argument against metro policing, that there will never be metro policing. Well, if there will never be metro policing, are we now moving towards metro fire companies? Is that the next step? You know, I'm kind of watching the fringes come together here, and I believe we're going to metro governing. I've watched the cars they've bought, I've watched the colors change, I've watched the cross swearing in. If these are not all little steps towards metro government, I don't know what is. I don't know that I would be against metro government. We've seen it work in other places in Florida, Virginia. I mean, there are other places that they have it. Maybe it's something to be discussed, but until we discuss it and we have it, I think that we need to go with how our tax bases are set out.
Johnson Street.
I just want to be real clear on the record. I have never made any kind of accusation about people looking at color when it comes to service. I've never been a part of a complaint as it relates to the delivery of service, and I will not be. Second, two of those volunteer fire companies are in my council Mac district, and I take my responsibility to those two fire companies just as serious as I take my responsibility to the city. By the same token, in raising the issues of diversity, here again, I think I've been fair, and I think I've been responsible. You know, we chose, when the incident transpired between the Brandywine Fire Chief and the City Chief, we chose to bring the Brandywine Fire Chief, explain his side of the story. Fundamental Affairs would have said, I bring the Wilmington Chief in and give his side of the story, but that would have done nothing but inflame it. And again, I'm not going to go to war about $225,000. I am going to raise the concern about the point being made, and I think it's an inappropriate point at the inappropriate time by this government. I mean, out of the $260 million on the table, $225,000 is not going to do anything to make or break the budget. And $225,000 is not going to do anything to make or break the City of Wilmington Fire Department. It's the point in being responsible and not leaving doors open for folks to say that it's us versus them, it's city versus county. I don't want to be a part of that.
Are there any other amendments that any council member has?
I think that Tim alluded to this before, but we have, and I wish that Mr. McDonald was here, we have asked...
I'm sorry.
Oh, did you hear your name?
My ears were burning.
We have had a discussion about the $1.5 million that's gone into the farmland preservation.
Yes.
And I know that the county and the state had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and my concern is not with necessarily the $1.5 million, but last year when we put the $3 million in, we put it in under land acquisition. All of a sudden in this budget, it shows up in parentheses under farmland preservation. We know what happened. We know it's an I told you so situation. And now we have the Open Space Council backing out of helping to fund for farmland preservation. My fear is that now we are going to add this 1.5 and 1.5 the next year and 1.5 the next year or whatever it is and end up being the sole purchasers of the development rights. when we purchase the development rights, those people owning that farm still have the ability to sell that farm as long as it's continued to farm. And in some cases, depending on what program it's in, there's a 25-year limit on those development rights. And after that, it reverts back to being able to be sold for full fair market value. So if I had two scenarios, one scenario was to pull the $1.5 million. The other scenario was if it was going to stay in, to have it under land acquisition, so that in any one of the districts, if there was land that was for sale, and we felt that it was appropriate for purchase for parkland or whatever else, that we would have the ability to do that. So I know we were waiting for something from DENREC. I mean, the conclusion I understand from that meeting was that the state was looking at purchasing one of those farms directly, so that and the state would make some parkland out of that farm, and we would then be part of farmland preservation for the second farm. But waiting for that to come in writing from DENREC at this point has not happened, and good chance that it will not happen prior to the budget being passed. So I would like to see some conclusion on the $1.5 million that secures it for all districts, not for an accumulation of what we thought we didn't want last year, or thought we weren't going to get last year, but got anyway.
Okay. Take a shot at this. And Mr. Powers, please jump in if I go off track. We have been trying to get an answer from DENREC. I've left several messages and the calls haven't come back. The $1.5 million that's additional to the $3 million that exists there, is that $3 million has been kind of earmarked to finish up to stop the sewer expansion that could take place as a result of the Chancery Court and Superior Court decisions that we have to provide sewer. We're not going to exceed that dollar amount for the farmland preservation for those two farms. That's capped out, because anything more than that, we must put the sewer in. It's going to cost us $2.5 to $3.5 million. It varies, depends on how big the line has to be, whether we can get through the sleeve in Route 1. So that particular package of things, that $3 million, if that didn't go through, we'd be coming back to council and say, we need to take that $3 million from here and put it into sewers, because we're going to have to sewer that area. That's kind of the big thought. So if that doesn't happen, it's probably going to end up, we're going to have to sewer the area. Now, what the state is providing or trying to do, they haven't gotten back to us, but the grapevine is that they're not going to accept an outright purchase on the, and I might have these reversed, the Warren Farm, which is near the 1,000-acre marsh, they flat out refused that. That they don't want to sell it, they want to retain the agricultural rights and continue to farm it. The Lester party, I drove by there last Friday, and there's a sign that's up with 100-some-odd acres with sewer available. So it seems like they are ready to sell to a developer if it comes to pass. Do I know whether there's a ready, willing, and able financed buyer? I hear there is, but I haven't seen it, so I can't tell you that. Now, getting back to the point of the story, and it's a long track, but the $1.5 million that's additional that we have sitting there this year, we are going to use that as part of our match, because we're going to try to go direct to the feds for farmland preservation. And we have to have matching funds budgeted, or they're not going to match us. I understand the complexity of the issue, and I understand the concern is it might look on the outside like we're trying to build up a pot so we can overpay for those two parcels, and that's not going to happen.
And do we have any money that's in land acquisition for anything else in any of the other 12 districts that might come up?
I'd have to defer to Ed for land acquisition.
Because it was all one column or one line the last time I looked, and there.
Land acquisition. First of all, the description of the project is funding for farmland preservation and open space initiatives. That's the official title.
Right, and we had that discussion during the budget cycle last year also. And we were told that it was not just farmland preservation, but for anything that came up. And then this year it shows up in the budget in parentheses, farmland preservation.
See, I'm looking at the budget book here, and this is the book that council approves. I don't see the parentheses in here.
Okay, well, it wasn't something that came across.
It might have been another document, but this is the official book that council approves. States specifically in the resolution that council approves pages 1 through whatever in this book. There is another project called Parkland Acquisition.
Right. That's
And
that's acquisition to be determined by Department of Special Services in each parks. And that project currently has $700,000 in it, I guess, still. But, and there's an additional $500,000 being requested for next year. So that would give about $1.2 million for specifically for Parkland Acquisition. And the other, as you were saying earlier, the $3 million plus the request of $1.5 would be $4.5 million, whether that's for farmland or for any open space initiatives, whatever the next thing would be. I'm sorry, thank you.
Jim McDonald. And that can be used anywhere in any of the districts in Newcastle County?
Yes.
Okay. Does that kind of meet the needs, Councilwoman?
After last year's discussion, it really doesn't, because, you know, I felt like what we were told last year, what some of us said last year and what we were told was not going to happen, happened. So, we were told that the $3 million was not just for the farmland preservation of those two farms. That was the discussion. And we were said, no, that's not true. It can be spent in anybody's district. It's just for land acquisition. That's not what happened. So to add another $1.5 million to it now, I'm a little leery.
I understand your concern. I'm coming into this December, January of this year, and we truly do have two lawsuits that we are subject to taking.
Correct, and I remember those. And, you know, there are constituents, there are people saying, if we're going to spend that kind of money, why are we not owning the land? You know, where
we're only spending about, I think it's 44% of the value of the land for buying the development rights. We're not paying the full load of the property. I think was appraised. It was like $7 or $8 million for both parcels, and we're somewhere south of.
And is that the open space appraisal, or is that the original appraisal?
There was two appraisals that I saw that. One used a market approach, and another gentleman used a. A cumulative, some kind of valuation.
Used two different evaluations. It was.
And quite frankly, the one gentleman that did the appraisal is a well-respected appraiser. I don't have any track record, so
right.
I can't really tell you.
But they're like $1 million apart, is my understanding.
Right.
From the state.
One used a market approach and one used a cost approach. That was the other one. And the market approach had a different valuation based on what is the highest and best use for the property. And that's assuming that it had sewer, and the highest and best
right.
use from a market approach is
right.
building houses.
Right.
So he took that at some dollar value. I'm guessing at the number, so please don't hold me to an exact number. But for the ease of the operation, say it was $8 million
wow.
for both parcels. He then took a factor, I believe it was 43% of that value was what the 43% of that total value was what the agricultural value of the land was. So the difference between the ag value and the developed value is what the farmland preservation purchase price is. And as I understand it, the easement that would take place would be reviewed after 25 years, but would have to come back to council in order for council to set a value for the development rights to be purchased back, correct?
It would be
40%. Okay, to respond to this, because I don't want to go to Councilman Cardi and Councilwoman Dillon.
It would be the same as it's been in the past with the county. It would be forever. The easements.
That's if it goes into the county program.
Well, no, what was done with Mike Burkowski and what was said with all three is what it would be combining the two, but what the county would be for sure. And also, Mike Burkowski has a bill right now to change the state to be forever, too.
But
to get rid of the 25 years. The people that are already in are stuck there.
They could get
out of it. The difference too is the 25 years doesn't they would have to prove that they can't farm. That's the only way they can get out. And if that happened, the extra money would go to the Ag Foundation, not, this is on the State Ag Foundation. But the easement would be forever.
Only if it's purchased after the state law is changed.
No. The agreement would be, if the county participated with the state money, it would be forever. And it would also, with the federal programs, would be forever. And, you know, the appraisal with Mastin, which may be going to court because his office sits on the Open Space Council, and the appraisal is not a very good appraisal that was done the second one. So that's another whole story.
Well, I would certainly hope that we don't get in the middle of something that's going to end up...
Well, they're out of it. I can tell you right now, they're out of it. One thing, when you do an appraisal, and he was doing an appraisal for ag land easements, and then Open Space, meaning Colin Amar and Dave Small, decide to go offer the money that they never appraised the house and anything else, and offered a lower amount of money.
But I thought a house wasn't part of the appraisal in farmland preservation. I thought it was only the farmland.
It wouldn't be in the easement. But they're looking to buy, as you said, fee simple. It's not the right appraisal.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, I have a question. We have two more people to speak on this issue, I guess. Is the information that you're receiving here conducive to a possible amendment coming forward?
Possible.
Okay. I would suggest that any further information that the administration may have relevant to this should get it over to the councilwoman as soon as possible. Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, I'm not going to belabor all this. I'll just tell you from my point of view, this whole issue of land acquisition, farmland preservation is something that I feel in a decade that I've been here, we've never really had a thorough discussion as an agenda point on any of our committees, such as land. I guess it would go to land use, And I think it's something that we need to get a briefing on and get our collective heads around, because I can tell you I'm not adequately prepared to make evaluations about farmland preservation, land acquisition. I certainly have parcels in the 8th District that I think need to be acquired by this county to protect areas from flooding, and you know, how about that? So, you know, we need to, you know, really get clarity about policy on farmland, land acquisition, for what reasons, parkland, and we haven't acquired a lot of parkland since I've been here. We really haven't. And so, you know, going forward, if we're going to be making moves, I would like to have, you know, more information so I can make informed decisions about our budget.
Councilman,
I'm going to pass at the moment.
I was thinking of you for the land use agenda. Okay.
I get a question on this, though. It doesn't have an amendment. If you don't want to listen to it, we'll just go to another.
Just last piece of information on this, if you can, and then let's try to get to all right, the purpose then. Of the meeting.
All right. Well, I just... So, it was around $8 million, I guess. Give or take, you don't know. But I was going to the 44%. I just heard somebody say it was like $3.5 million. If nobody comes up with the other, we're only $3 million to land acquisition. It was just the 44% is us.
Well,
I guess that's why I'm confused.
If you give me 1 second, I have some notes here.
And we can talk. If you want to talk as a by meeting, we can do that, Jim. I mean, and Powers, Mr. Powers to stand in, too. Instead of just holding it up, I don't want to hold it up.
What it is that the state was going to put up a dollar amount to get to the total appraised value for farmland preservation. Our total participation all in, end of the day, for both parcels would not exceed $3 million because it doesn't make sense for us to go past that. So whatever the state wants to put in on top of it, that's on them. But for us, the $3
million, I always thought it was a 50-50 deal. Mm-hmm.
No, it's
okay. I was really wrong. Okay. That's fine.
The administration has some amendments they want to put forward.
Pardon? Can you deal with your amendments?
Yeah. Subject to what you put out to start.
Mr.
Here's the newspaper article.
Okay. Okay, what you have in front of you, is a summary of our proposed amendments. The first one, the top part, is the amendments to the operating budget. The first amendment is amendment number one, based on the recent settlement of the FOP contract and the passage of the resolution last night.
Let me interrupt for a moment. We're continuing to run as we did with council. What we have here are the ideas, but the legislation's not ready yet.
Correct.
Okay.
These will be our proposed, administration's proposed amendment.
Okay.
Okay. The first one is the FOP contract settlement. Our estimated cost was $1,242,500 in the fiscal note last night in the resolution. In order to fund that for next year, we are, the county executive is recertifying the estimate for the transfer for next year to increase the estimate that we are projecting for transfer tax. Second amendment is the proposal by the county executive, as Captain Bell mentioned earlier, is the 5% increase in funding for the volunteer fire company. That's $179,000, and that again would be funded through increase in their estimated transfer tax for next year. And I have those numbers to show you those. The last amendment that I've mentioned a couple times before council is for street light rates for next year. We had anticipated when we put the budget together to use about $160,000, $200,000 left over from this year's budget. Unfortunately, Delmarva raised their rates during the year, so that money we had proposed to use for next year's budget to offset those rates, we're going to pull back. And in fact, there's an ordinance presented to council last night to appropriate additional $160,000 to this year's budget so we can make those street light payments. So to make up that difference, so next year we are going to raise the rates slightly for all the rates for all the different types of streetlights to cover that $167,000 we need to pay our streetlight bill. So those are the three operating amendments. If you turn to the second page real quick, this is getting operating again before we get to the capital, and I'll answer any questions on the operating. You'll see at the top part will show you the original budget recommended by the county executive by fund. And then under that are the two amendments I just proposed, amendment number one and amendment number two. The street light is a funding amendment, so that's why you don't see that here. We're not increasing the light tax budget, it's just the source of funding for the street lights. Those are the amendments we currently have for the operating budget. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
And let's just clarify that it's not an increase in tax because on the street light. Because that's a carryover of the excess funding that's in the account.
Yeah, we are increasing the tax for streetlights.
For streetlights, and that's because they're more of a rent.
Right. Because the money we thought we could use next for
that's right.
Rates
got eaten up.
Got eaten up. Yeah, exactly. Questions on the operating budget? Okay. The next. On the bottom, you see the capital budget program amendments. The very first amendment is Carousel Park. We are proposing to remove $1.5 million, $1,547,000 from the capital program in 2017. That was the money that was proposed for the amphitheater, the outside theater at Carousel. It was decided that theater was not needed. So we are removing that from the program for 2017. That explains that. The next one is the Glasgow Hermitage project. I do have a handout for that. Here to give out. When we first presented the capital budget to council, a lot of the money was front-loaded for that project. And we've had meetings with some of the council persons, about that particular project. And special services went back and looked at that project and came up with a a way to phase that project in, and then even after 1 year to take a look at that project and see where we are as far as that. So, these two sheets are up.
Start one down one side of the table,
yep.
One down the other.
I'm careful. Yeah. Over here.
One more class, a small amount of class.
Explain this real quick. On Glasgow Regional Park, if you look, going back to the first sheet I gave you, the stapled two sheets, the top part that's presented, that will be presented to council. The Hermitage project was $8,485,000. For 2015, $4,833,000 was requested, and for 2016, $3,652,000 was requested. That project, as I said, is now being programmed out. In 2015, we are requesting $3,553,000 now for that project. In 2016, $2,799,000. 2017, $1,394,000. The difference in that project is around $750,000, and that's going to be less by $750,000. And the reason for that is, again, the amphitheater at Glasgow is being removed from that project. And what I presented to you was two sheets. One sheet has the Glasgow Park, the actual what's going to be done in those different phases, and the other sheet is the actual schematic of the park in the different phases. Special Services is here if there's any particular questions about that project. But our proposal would be to reduce that project by $750,000 and phase it out over 3 years instead of all of 2 years.
That's what we do.
You know, when this came before us last time, I asked what kind of work had been done in terms of whether the market would sustain 50 spaces. As I'm looking at this now, there's way more than 50 spaces. You now have indoor and outdoor. I mean, you've got 70 spaces alone in phase three.
Just to clarify, there's two sheets I gave you here. You go back to the two sheets, and I'll let some other people answer that. This project is now going to be phased in, phase one, phase two, phase three. If you look at the detail, after phase one, there's going to be an assessment done of the need to go on to phase two and phase three. I don't know, Special Services, how many spots do we have in phase one?
This is Steve Rubel, Special Services. To clarify one thing, we always were proposing to have indoor and outdoor vending spaces. But by breaking up into three phases, if you look at your plan, phase one, you know, we'll have approximately 15 plus indoor vendor spaces and 15 plus outdoor vendor spaces. So markedly scaling back what was originally proposed for phase one.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and then we'll get a response from Mr. McDonald.
I thought when we met with the county executive that we were going to put 10 spaces in total in this fiscal year and then reevaluate whether those were adequately filled.
All right.
Because we were told in a special services or community services or something meeting that there, through annually, there were about, if, and I may be a little off here, 12 to 15 vendors that signed up, but routinely about 8 to 10 showed up in a week, every week. So how does that translate into 15
to 18 and 15 to 30.
Mr. McDonald, do you want
to? Mr. McDonald, executive office. And Steve, jump in if I go off track here. What it was is that in phase one, there was that building that was being stabilized. I call it a cow barn, I don't know what it really is. And that was always going to be considered. The count internally, I think it can be anything you want it to be as far as the size. That was just what the architect drew up. But that's all part of that stabilization of that one building that's immediately behind the house.
Right, I get that. Okay. I get that that part of the stabilization was going to be in phase one. But I think we came out of there, and correct me if I'm off base here, I thought we came out of there thinking that there were going to be 10 vendor spaces this year. Reevaluate and then decide how many we're going to go in next year. Now, since the numbers in phase one, phase two, and phase three change, does that, I'm assuming that that means this year indoor 15 to 18, outdoor this year 15 to 30, then in phase two another 15 to 20 and in the indoor and another 10 to 15 in the outdoor, which Councilman Redd is right. We're now way beyond what the original 50 was.
Mr. McDonald, you want to make comment?
Sure.
And then we'll and the general manager wants to make comments too.
Wow. I understand.
Yeah.
The
is that
count.
What we talked about?
The exterior.
Yeah.
The exterior farmer's market stands are. They
parking
can be
spaces.
Three, they can be 300. It's just the open space that we have available. There's not going to be any facility,
right?
As I understand it.
So okay,
I'm not even really focused on those as much because that's going to be part of the parking lot.
So they could be part of the parking spaces, period.
Right.
Okay, got that.
Now, as far as the other building goes, I'm going to let Wayne speak to why it's 15 to 18, not 10 to 15. I don't know whether that's an architectural choice or whether on that phase one that is part of that barn that they're rehabbing. So that's going to be their answer. But everything else you said is true. It's going to be reevaluated in phase three. If there is no need for it, they're not going to build the additional space in the back. If I understand the plan correctly, is as we left, that area will be blocked or fenced off to prevent access until whatever happens or doesn't happen in the back. Did I characterize that correctly, Wayne, for the most part?
Let me explain.
Okay.
Wayne Merritt's Special Services Acting General Manager. Special Services began this project in an attempt to save the buildings, to get rid of the buildings that are hopeless and to save the buildings, some of the buildings. For all these spaces that we're talking about for vendors, it's generally either it's going to be in a building that we want to renovate or it's going to be an area, because we're not building any structures specifically for a vendor to come in. So we could have 5, we could have 20, we could have 10. And after the first year, because right now I think you're right, I think it is probably about 12 vendors that they have currently. It's hopefully, as time goes on, that if we need to create additional space for additional vendors, that'll take place in the further stages. Our position is we want to save some of those buildings. Okay? And I would leave it up to the community services to talk about any of the plans relative to the number of vendors and all this.
And I think that that was clear in the meeting that we had asked that, that we said we had no problem with saving the buildings. That's part of what we're supposed to do. So that was not the issue. The issue was committing to how many vendor spaces, because if you're going to do something in the building, you have to have some sort of opening within that building for each vendor, correct? Or is it indoor? I mean, Councilman Redd a while back asked the question, and it was something that I had never thought of. What I got out of his question was, do you have people already contracted to take these spaces? Which in my mind meant, are we going to do this like they do the farmers market in Newcastle versus the farmers markets in Carousel, farmers market in Carousel Park, where every year it's a different group of people. If you want to come, you sign up, you pull your truck in, done and over with. You pull in for 3-4 hours a day, and that's it. I mean, it's a no cost. It's actually probably a little bit revenue generating because we do charge them something, I believe, for the permit to come in and sell. So this is, I don't have a problem with renovating the buildings. I have a problem in how we're going to use the vendor spaces, farmers market-like, Carousel Park-like,
and this is way beyond the number that was discussed when we walked out of there.
Yeah, and this is Steve Rubel again, Special Services. The numbers that we have put in this plan are probably a little misleading, especially as they compare to what Community Services is currently developing. You know, the numbers that you see on this plan are more max numbers that we could get in this small area that we're renovating as far as phase one. So you could get 15 to 30 outdoor vendor spaces. We won't be doing that, but real estate wise, you could squeeze that in if you wanted to. So I think those numbers are a little misleading. We're going to be shooting for the 10 plus vendor spaces or whatever Community Services feels can be supported there. And we can have Jane speak a little bit more about what they've determined based on the initial market studies they may have done. But you're correct. We're going to be shooting for, you know, 10 plus, you know, indoor and outdoor.
So 10 indoor and 10 outdoor, so 20, not 10 total.
Well, let's
for the phase one.
Yeah, let me let Community Services add to this conversation.
Good afternoon. Sophia Hansen with Community Services. We put together a little overview on the updated farmers market. And I just wanted to start by saying, for those of you that don't know, I have a background in historic preservation, so we're going to rock with what some of us do know. Unfortunately, we're touring Rockwood tomorrow, but the next stop will be Glasgow to tour the buildings, or you know, whichever ones we can access. But so I'm excited about that. What they're proposing is we're going beyond producer only to attract a secondary market. So we'll be focusing on a broader group, micro businesses, gifts, jewelry making, consignment, and we're trying to make it more of a destination event with music and health and wellness promotion. And this could, the actual time period could be expanded because we'd have access to indoor facilities. So this is a draft of what we put together, so we're open to any kind of feedback or comments that you have about what we prepare. And we're here to answer questions.
Councilman Retta.
You look to be so enthusiastic about it.
Well, I'm just seeing the headlines. Knock off Nikes picked up at Glasgow Farm.
Well, it would be have a little more haute couture
theme to it. Oh, it would be a place I can't shop.
Right.
You want a definition of that word, Joe?
We got Lauren Taylor. The thing that I'm looking at here is the projected of spaces indoor and outdoor.
Right.
Uh-huh. The other part of this, to me, when you do projection, I know we discussed it before, Councilwoman just brought it up about what I said about the building. You said you're going to renovate it because it has to be renovated to bring it up to standard. Then we're going to look at maybe putting vendors in there. I believe that was your last thing you said to me, Wayne. The other part of this is there's no marketing. I don't see any marketing at all to put vendors in.
We have a marketing budget.
Yeah.
You have a market? No. I'm talking about marketing advertising.
We're opening businesses for these people.
And you usually, I mean, I've been to a couple other places, a couple other states, and one of the places that I was at, they had a marketing sign and marketing in the paper and marketing in the community. For advertising for spaces to be put in there for vendors. It didn't necessarily be the same as what we're doing, but they had vendors that they were looking for. They marketed it for a while before they built it. Let the people know what they were going to build, how it was going to look, you know, on a perspective, just like they would a project coming up around here. Now, this state is so small, I don't know how many people they think they're going to get in there, because the places that I was at, they had less vendors, and it was we could put Delaware in the city itself. So this to me is, you're marketing something on a piece of paper here, and you're bringing it to us without marketing in the public, that I can see.
50 spaces that you just gave us here.
Over a 5-year period.
It's still 50. I mean, because you don't know if you're going to have 10. Right now you got, I know you have some down there. It's early yet. It's springtime. It's not summer. For the farmer's market down there. About five people there. Maybe in the summer you might have 10, hopefully. Carousel has, in the summertime, they have maybe 5.
I think just so that we can bring a little closure to the phase one aspect of this. The indoor, the barn that's being rehabilitated, it can be anything. We just happen to look at it and say, we can put a farmer's market in there. I don't think there's any real special provisioning in there that makes it totally unique just to be open space for a farmer's market, correct? I mean, right. So what we're saying is in phase one, oh, by the way, this is what we'd like to use this building for, but it's not absolutely dedicated totally in perpetuity to be 10 to 18 farmer's market spaces. If the farmer's market flops, it might be where they store the equipment. I don't know. But I'm just saying is this is all just part of the preservation in phase one of that core group of buildings. And the as far as the external spots are, they're just marks on the ground. I mean, that doesn't, they're really, you can make it 10 spots, 50 spots, 3 spots. It doesn't matter. It's part of phase one because we're putting all the parking in, we're putting in the sidewalks, and these vendors will be off to that space. As far as, that's a whole different discussion for me as far as the marketing through community services. What I'm trying to address is the building cost and the potential use of that building going forward. But we want to preserve those core buildings as historically significant. What the barn is used for, you know, that becomes community services or some ideas from council.
If I can just answer that, we haven't done any market analysis that we can present to council. But one of the things they did with the farmers market at Cool Springs Park was they partnered with a local nonprofit that went out, and I don't know if any of you have been to that flowers market, but it's their farmers market. It's flourishing, and they get hundreds of people every week. So that's something we'd be probably looking to do is bring in some kind of nonprofit entity to partner with us.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, then Councilman Bowers.
Okay, well, I think obviously we have two different issues here. I mean, we know that the buildings have to be renovated. Not a problem with that. You know, the historic preservation part of it, we don't want anybody injured because the building is going to fall down on them or whatever. But I think that I came away from a meeting believing that there were going to be 10 spaces this year. I now do not have a very clear understanding of what we intend to do with an indoor farmers market. And my vision now, I think, goes more towards what Councilman Retta's vision was a while back. I thought we were pulling trucks up and opening the back of them and selling whatever we grew. You know, when I look at what we're comparing for other area markets, up to $39,000 for a year-round market, $24,000 for 8 months, I think we better do some needs assessment and get some contracts signed ahead of time before we put the kind of money that I would imagine you have to put into a farmer's market in order to attract businesses that are going to pay that.
Councilman Powers.
Really, preserving the barns, you know, they got to be preserved. If they were used, they could be rented out. They could be used the same as a pavilion. One thing about an indoor farmer's market, a truly farmer's market, there's not one in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Dutch Country Market that is voted here is not a farmer. It's not farmers in there. They're all Amish coming down from Lancaster buying out of Philly. If you look at the list, that is probably the people that right now, yeah, it's early on. It's been about, I think, 6 or 7. And the 12 or more than these have participated last year alone. So there is 10 or 12 spaces. The difference, knowing from farmers throughout the state, if there was a truly not Newcastle farmers market, which really isn't a farmer's market either. But if there was a farmer's market that went with farmers, I think you'd have, especially with the year long, that you'd have a bunch throughout the state coming up for it. But I know Smyrna's been trying to figure out how to do an indoor farmer's market, but there isn't one right now. Cool Springs, I know Cool Springs real well. Cool Springs is kind of a neat situation. They're doing it, whatever they call it, the food stamp program. They give tokens out. It's a situation to try to get fresh local foods into Wilmington, knowing that my son's participated. Pretty much half of it's been food stamps, the other half's everything else. There's probably a need in that area, and I know they're working on trying to do the same situation, but it takes a lot, whoever's running it, to be able to handle, to take. Who's really doing the food stamps is the group that you said, which was West End Neighborhood House. They get tokens, and the vendor gets the tokens, turns them in, and the next week they give a check, deducting the cost out of doing whatever your volume was. And that's one of, I know my son's going for sure, it's probably been one of our better farmers' markets. But I know in my, you know, my district comes just south of there. There's a lot of people wanting this in the area. And it's early in the season, as Joe said.
My question is, in the farmer's market end, if it's operating, or whoever, if it's operating Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at the close up Sunday, are the vendors going to be required to take everything with them?
We take everything every time we go.
You're not selling Nikes and...
Yeah, but I hope it does. I'll build powers. Yeah. I hope it doesn't turn into that.
What was said was jewelry, clothing.
But it's usually what it is what's been involved now is if you're producing it.
My point is, I don't want it to turn into a Newcastle farm market where they tarp everything, you know, tarp it over, yep, and leave it. Because I got to tell you, if you can tarp it and leave it for a week and ain't nobody stealing it, I don't know why you're trying to sell it next Friday.
I agree with you 100%. I don't want it turning into that. There needs to be a tie that it's something produced,
so it becomes a flea market.
Yeah, some of the people are making soaps, doing stuff themselves.
Mr. McGowan.
I just want the Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Sheldon. I was just speaking to Steve. The building that is being rehabbed, barn, is being called, for lack of a better description, a farmer's market. It's going to be a rehabbed open structure that can be used for anything that anybody wants to use in the future. As far as an open space would go, there's limits, obviously. They call it the farmer's market because it could be provisioned for 10 people to come in, have their tents, but it's a wide open space. There's no real special provisioning. There's no HVAC for it. I don't believe there's anything other than what it would take just to rehab the building. So when they assigned a number to it, I think that's kind of where we go off the track, is if it doesn't take off, the building still has to be preserved and it will be used for something else. It won't be just a throwaway. I'm hoping I'm explaining it fairly well, but it's going to be rehabbed, and what it's earmarked for can change next year.
Well, let me make Mr. Hansen flinch. I keep hearing that it has to be preserved. Why?
That's a whole other separate meaning, I guess.
Why? Because this historical... I came to council and told them, because I used to attend all the historical review meetings, and it scared me to death when I turned 50, because I found out anything 50 and over, you couldn't change without their approval, and then people didn't approve nothing. If they found a brick, you had to build a house around it.
Things, but you want it to be historic, of that era.
The only thing I want historic is older women. Mr. Powell.
I just want to say, looking at the first barn, which is the smaller one there, that's the oldest building there. It's a bank barn. But one thing about this farm is when it was a dairy, it was one of the state-of-the-art dairies in the whole country. And the last barn, I think the barn in the middle, one of them is a bull barn because they were breeding cattle. One was a heifer barn, one was a dairy. And it's, I think the first barn is the oldest one. I know it is. Now, the other ones hit the 50-year-old thing. This might hit 200 or something. Yeah. So that would be the first barn that's in brown, and it says Farmer's Barn.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to go on record and say I did call it a cow barn, so I was half right.
Okay. Is there any further possible amendment? Okay, here's my question before we lose a quorum here. Excuse me. Those that have discussed proposed amendments, Councilman Bell has left the building, is there an anticipation that they would be in written form as early as Monday for a Monday meeting? If not, you know, I would entertain a motion if council so feels to suspend the Monday meeting for lack of agenda items.
So moved.
There's a second.
Yeah.
There's a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going. You're not.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Good.
Okay. I was just going to say, I think that if we don't have a Monday meeting with amendments, we better plan to be back here next Wednesday then. I'm just throwing that out.
We don't know if anybody's going to have their amendments.
Well, is there going to be a follow-up anytime?
Well, there needs to be a follow-up.
It has to be before the end of the month.
The following Tuesday is the council vote.
27th is council vote. So there's 13 days.
Wait a minute. There's no land use next Tuesday. They canceled land use.
Yeah, and is there anything on special services? If not, we'll cancel it.
Unless somebody from council has a question.
No, Timmy. We don't have anything.
No, we don't have anything.
No, sure. Oh, were you? Okay, good. Well,
Timmy, you don't have
anything. We're off Tuesday then.
Tuesday. Except that we have the technology subcommittee at 1:30. From what I'm seeing.
Yeah, what's your point?
Okay. So we're meeting in the little conference room in the back.
We'll meet in the little conference room in the back. Yes.
Well, no, because the Monday before the Tuesday vote is Memorial Day.
Right.
So I will propose. I will propose to council. I propose to those here today, council, that as voted, Monday's meeting will be suspended due to lack of agenda items, and we will schedule a meeting for Thursday, May 22nd at 3 p.m. Is that?
I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, that there is no meetings on that Tuesday now. Land use and special services just been canceled.
That would be next Tuesday.
That's next Tuesday now. That might be too early.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking. I mean, you're only talking one day's difference between Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah. We might better be with Thursday.
Well, how many amendments are we expecting?
You got or the 21st. I'm just going to make sure we have 7 days on. Or we can do the 21st. We can do
well,
Wednesday. That'll allow
people. That's coming from the administration. They supposedly have that.
They're writing that.
I guess the question is, what's council's purpose of having another meeting?
That's for amendment. Because this council established an internal process a while back that anything known that's going to be coming, we wanted to see in written form. And we had agreed to do a two-meeting discussion. Whether anybody shows up or not is something else.
Why would we meet the 25th?
Council Street.
Why can't we just have it, the Finance Committee meeting on the night we're going to vote on?
But we will.
Fight all night, be done.
Here's what I'll do. I would ask any agenda items coming forward or amendments to the budget to be distributed to all council members as soon as possible. They will be on the agenda for the Finance Committee meeting
I would anticipate that at that, number one, we'll try to keep the other finance issues to a minimum, and pretty much what will need to be discussed will just be those amendments. And I would anticipate in very short order, the sponsors will have an idea of whether they want to move it forward or not.
Especially by then.
Mr. Mayor.
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager, Special Services. At the Finance Committee meeting, we'll do a brief presentation on the stormwater issues that Councilman Cartier raised.
It's relative to
right.
The budget.
To the budget. Yeah.
Correct.
But we haven't seen.
Please define brief.
Just from a presentation standpoint, we can do it in 2 minutes. I can't questions.
Let me ask. On the 27th,
you said 2 minutes.
On the 27th, there are what meetings?
It'll be the question.
Give me one moment.
There should be community services at 3.
Why do you not have this public safety on the finance and not in special services?
Because that would be the only topic that we would have next Tuesday.
How does council feel about pushing a finance meeting back to 1 o'clock?
Fine.
That was another half hour.
I can do
fine.
Okay. So on May 27th, we'll have the finance meeting. It will begin at 1 o'clock. It will be duly noticed. Ms. Finnegan, Mr. Hallletter, the change in time. Be careful when you cut and paste, please. Administration?
All right with that. We have another amendment.
Okay. I would still ask that anyone, the administration and other, because this is a budget, it's not similar to the other things that we do, that once you get your amendment over, you get it squared away with Betsy, we can handle it over here. We'll ask to be distributed as soon as possible. Yes, ma'am. Councilwoman.
So it's my understanding that if there was anything that we wanted as a capital amendment, it's too late.
That's according to code, the county has 15 days to opine on that.
Right.
I will ask the executive, Mr. McDonald, according to county code, if the county council to the capital budget, the county executive has 15 days to opine on that. That clock has already started ticking.
This is what we got to do last year, which is why we moved the capital to the front.
Right.
Of the presentations. We don't have 15 days. We have 13 days from the day of the budget
presentation.
Mr. McDonald.
I think the county executive would be more than able to facilitate whatever needs to be done in order for this budget to move forward.
There you go.
So what do you say? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but let's be honest and fair to everyone. What I'm hearing is the county executive would be willing to look at any amendments to the capital budget.
I believe so. Yes.
If someone does a capital amendment in a timely fashion, submits it, understanding. If the county executive responds before the 27th, we can move it. No, it's got to be advertised. No, it's amendment, so it doesn't have to be advertised. Right, where's she going? She's not here.
Is it worth
so. If he responds prior to, we can move it forward to the floor. If he doesn't, then we can't. Councilman Street.
I just want to
adjourn.
Yeah, I'll do that too. I just want, realistically, I want everybody to think about the fact we're planning to go to in these in-depth discussions and have at it. I'm going to call it a little finance war in the afternoon, finance war at night over a relatively minor amount of money compared to the total operating budget. So,
is there a motion?
I hope we got our time accordingly.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Can I move the second?